In this episode, we discuss England's woes, the relief of MLS finalizing its new media rights deal, well, almost, our thoughts and insight about the 16 cities named to host the 2026 World Cup, and Peacock is ready to spring a surprise. My name is Christopher Harris, and I'm joined by my co-host Kartik Krishnayar. Kartik, it's been just a massive week, so much going on. We waited until Friday to record this episode because we wanted to kind of partly, I mean, definitely to wait until the announcement of the 16 cities for the World Cup in 2026. Also to kind of take stock of what's happening this week with the MLS deal, which we'll get into in a little while. There's a lot to dive into. We could probably do a two-hour episode on the MLS rights deal alone. We're not going to. I think in many ways, we'll give our initial thoughts. And there'll probably be a series of articles in the coming days, if not weeks, in regards to this, because there's a lot to get into. But before we go there, Kartik, let's talk about the 2026 World Cup. It seems so far away. But in some ways, it's almost here. I mean, we've got the announcement, the 16 cities. Let's just go through those real quickly, too, for any listeners who are not up to speed on terms of who got them, the hosting rights. So in the West, it's Vancouver, Seattle, San Francisco, Bay Area, Los Angeles, and Guadalajara. In the Central area, it's Kansas City, Dallas, Atlanta, Houston, Monterrey, and Mexico City. And then on the east, it's Toronto, Boston, Philadelphia, Miami, and then New York, New Jersey. Kartik, what's your initial thoughts when you got the announcement or heard the 16 cities? Any surprises here, or can these things perhaps change in the future?
Yeah, a number of surprises. I do think that it's calling Atlanta Central is kind of generous, and Guadalajara the West, they did that, I think, to balance the regions. They are thin in the Central in particular, but a couple of surprises. I think first off, Boston getting in over Baltimore, Washington was a real surprise to me and to many others. It felt like in the run up to this announcement, Washington not submitting its own bid, because you could have used the stadium in Landover, you could have done something else, maybe Nationals Park, but the National Capital Region getting behind a joint bid for Baltimore, right, for the Ravens Stadium in Baltimore, where in fact there'll be an Arsenal Everton friendly in less than a month from this recording. That felt like a pretty solid bet to be in the top 10 or 11 U.S. cities, right, that were going to get picked. And Boston looked like it would be on the outside looking in. The others that I think people were questioning whether they would be in or out, the ones that were in were Philly, Houston, and Kansas City. Now, I think Kansas City got picked based on the need for geographic balance. This thing looked a little bit like a barbell, to be honest with you, in the U.S. If you don't get Kansas City, maybe Cincinnati in there, which they didn't pick Cincinnati. It seems very coastal heavy, very kind of elite heavy, if you want to, you know, go another direction in terms of the places chosen. Nashville not being picked was a little bit of a surprise to me. That wasn't a city that necessarily, or a venue that was talked about a lot in terms of being in that top 10 or 11 in the U.S. However, I thought that they had a lot of intangibles working for them. They are also a hot city now, meaning in 2022, what we see in 2022 in Nashville may not be what we see in 2026. It's a city that's really emerging. It's a locale that's really emerging as an international destination. Orlando, maybe we can get into this in a minute. I have a lot of insight on the Orlando bid. I have more insight into the Orlando bid than I do into other city bids. And I'm disappointed they weren't picked personally, but I can understand why that decision was made. And then I think in terms of Canada, Toronto is a must. And we know how the Women's World Cup went, remember, in 2015. It was great, but they didn't play matches in Toronto, remember. And that was a real source point. Toronto is the most cosmopolitan city, I think, in the entirety of the Americas. So if you're going to have a North American World Cup and you don't have matches in Toronto, in spite of the capacity of the stadium being significantly less than any of the other stadiums chosen, then you really don't have a North American World Cup, in my opinion. So really glad Toronto got chosen. Vancouver and Seattle were... Also, there was some discussion about that, but if you rank the U.S. cities, I think the consensus was you would have the four consensus picks really were New York, New Jersey, Los Angeles, Miami, and Seattle, believe it or not. That was the other consensus pick if you talk to people in the game. The top three are very logical, right? New York, L.A., Miami. But the fourth being, although I was less, I'm less bullish on Miami than everyone else is, but maybe that's local bias or local being jaded locally. But Seattle was on that list of the kind of four must cities in the U.S., along with L.A., New York, Miami. So logically, then Vancouver has an edge over Montreal. Also, if you go, Edmonton had pulled out. If you go Montreal, you go Ottawa, you're going really northeast heavy, again, with the selection of Boston, which probably to me is the biggest surprise. So if I have to say one big surprise for me is the selection of Boston, which again, let's remind the listeners, is actually Foxborough, which is in many ways easier to get to from Providence than from Boston over Baltimore. And I don't think that's, I'm going to say this on the record, Chris, I don't think that was the right choice. I would have picked Baltimore.
Yeah, Boston, you have to wonder in terms of just the Kraft family and their influence within U.S. soccer and Major League Soccer, if that had something to do with it. That one does seem like the kind of the one that sticks out as kind of the strange decision. I mean, the key about this, too, is that I'm not a big fan of Gillette Stadium, but the key is that all these stadiums will have natural grass. So they'll have to put natural grass on a lot of these stadiums. The other thing about this, though, too, Kartik, is, I mean, with the No Rose Bowl in Los Angeles, so instead it's going to be at the SoFi Stadium in Inglewood, California. So right now the width of that stadium is not FIFA regulation, so they're going to have to figure out removing seats or something. So it's going to be narrow for sure.
Oh, yeah, I should mention, Chris, sorry, when I say L.A. was one of the four cities along with New York, Miami, and Seattle that were assumed, it was assumed by most of us that it would be the Rose Bowl for that reason. And that's another complication. That's probably the ultimate reason why Baltimore wasn't picked. It's a very tight fit for a regulation pitch in that stadium.
So question for you, Kartik, based on history in the past, in terms of countries hosting World Cups and looking ahead to 2026, a long ways off, a lot of things can happen. Is there any possibility that any of these cities could change or something, the 16 could actually not be the final 16?
Yes. So in 2009, I was on a call, you might have been on it too, with Sunil Gulati, where the U.S. was bidding on the 2018 and 2022 World Cups. They had finalized their stadiums, if you remember, for the bid for those World Cups. Chicago was left off, but specifically to Chicago, which got passed up, I believe, in that bid for Indianapolis. Cincinnati had not emerged yet. Cincinnati has emerged very late as a kind of a soccer hub. Sunil Gulati said very openly, look, if Chicago gets their bid in order before 2018, when we presumably host, we would probably make that switch. He didn't say it directly, but he left the door open at that point. So again, Chicago, because their stadium isn't big enough by the standard maybe that FIFA wants, and as I said, Toronto, they have to have Toronto host. So Toronto could get away with a tiny stadium, which, by the way, will probably be the best atmosphere in this World Cup at BMO. I do think that's a sore point for me, that Chicago is not hosting. Now, maybe something changes between now and 2026, that Chicago, which is... historically, the second city in the U.S. obviously has fallen behind L.A. as the second city the last 20 or 30 years, but it's historically, you know, it's one of the three major metropolitan areas in the U.S. If you say that there's three huge metropolitan areas not hosting, and it's also the home of U.S. soccer, I think it's a little bit of a sore point. So whatever precedent there is, I would love for Chicago to get back in the mix. Whoever expense that's at, I would love to see that happen. But realistically, there have been some changes. I would have to refresh my memory, Chris, through the years, but it's generally set at this point. Maybe one change at most.
Yeah, it's unlikely, but I mean, we've seen in previous World Cups, I mean, this is something we would not want to happen, but there's been natural disasters. Colombia was supposed to host the 1986 World Cup, and there was a natural disaster with earthquakes, and it ended up having to be Mexico hosting that tournament, and so on and so forth. There have been examples where there have been changes. It's unlikely. I mean, this looks like the final 16. I agree with you with Chicago missing out. That's a major U.S. city. I would have loved to have Nashville included. Perhaps surprisingly, with such a large tournament, 48 teams, only 16 cities, and only two from Canada. So I was surprised by that. I thought that Canada might have gotten the third one, but then that would have taken away from the United States. But there's plenty of love to go around. And FIFA says, too, that even for the cities that did bid but did not get the award of the host cities, many of those will be included in a lot of the World Cup festivities. I mean, there's going to be so much going on. If you go back to 1994, there was just so many events and concerts and things happening to really bring the whole country together. 2026 is going to be fantastic. And of course, Canada and Mexico, too. It should be great.
Let me mention that part real quickly, follow up on that part real quickly, because one of the things that I'm told was a weakness in the Orlando bid. Orlando may be the city, it's the closest to you. It's sentimentally the closest to me, even though I live in the Miami area. That issue of downtown and what you do in terms of crowds and street festivals and that sort of thing was more of an issue from Orlando when you compared it to Nashville, Atlanta, and Miami in the Southeast. Again, Miami was pretty much in. It was one of the locks. But when you compared it to Atlanta, which got in, maybe somewhat surprisingly, over Orlando, Nashville, and Nashville, which didn't get in but had a leg up in this, was downtown and the ability to accommodate crowds and do the sort of things that FIFA and that tournaments now are based around. Really, since this thing really took off with Germany 2006, that kind of changed the trajectory of how World Cups are in major cities. So the U.S. previously hosting in 94, that was a different world. That was also a smaller tournament, 24 teams. France, 98 maybe was the start of it with 32 teams. But I'm told consistently Germany, 2006 was the model. Now, one thing Orlando felt was working in their favor was that they have a high-speed train line, the only one in the United States, higher-speed train line. The Acela kind of is between Washington and Boston via New York, but less so between Orlando and Miami that will be online before the 2026 World Cup. So with Miami presumably a lock, which it was, having that sort of infrastructure connecting Orlando to another host city, which you don't have in any other host cities in the U.S. or Canada, Mexico, I'm not sure about their rail situation. I'm guessing they don't have it either. But in the U.S. and Canada, for sure, they thought was a major plus for them. But obviously, these other drawbacks, in addition to their stadium probably being arguably the worst of the 16 that were bid on by U.S. finalists, that killed their bid. But I do think they will have some part to play, as will, real quickly, Chris, before we move on, as will other cities that were not finalists. There will be a number of cities now, for those of you who are not familiar with the process, that bid on knowing where the matches are, Atlanta, Miami, Philadelphia, et cetera, et cetera. There will be a number of other cities and locales that bid on being hosts for teams, for 40 of the 48 teams that are not hosts of World Cup matches. So there are places I know in Florida that are going to turn around now that Miami has been awarded hosting rights that are going to say, hey, set up shop in, I'm just giving a potential example, set up shop in Palm Coast in Flagler County, Florida. If you're playing in Atlanta, you know, maybe you have a match in Atlanta and you have a match in Miami. So that's going to be the next thing to watch. So this tournament will include people, locales that were not selected in the finals in the U.S. Canada, I'm not as sure because Toronto and Vancouver are like 7 hours. Yeah, 7 hours apart by plane. Maybe it's not going to be the kind of national event it will be in the U.S.
Yeah. But Canada is going to be in it. So it's definitely going to be, in terms of on the streets, just a huge passion already for 2022. It's building in Canada as it is in the US. And I think in many ways, too, that the interesting thing about this, Kartik, actually, I'm not sure how much attention you paid to the actual television coverage, but I was interested to see that Telemundo and Fox Sports were basically teamed up on this joint broadcast. It was from 30 Rock, Rockefeller Center in New York City, where they did the actual studio and the hosting of the announcements with Gianni Infantino, the FIFA president, and Rob Stone and Alexi Lalas. But you had Andres Cantor and Ana Yurka from Telemundo Deportes. Not only were they from Telemundo Deportes, it was a simulcast broadcast, so the same visuals you're seeing on Fox was the same visuals you were seeing on Telemundo. But I thought it was interesting that the Telemundo's broadcast was, I mean, you had Andres Cantor and Ana Yarruca speaking mostly in English. And then if you watch the Telemundo coverage of the actual broadcast, it was dubbed in Spanish. And I thought that was interesting, Kartik, because maybe that gives us an idea in terms of Telemundo and Fox both know that, you know, they've got the 2022 World Cup, they've got the 2026 World Cup. Why not work together, minimize costs, kind of share some best practices, and actually work together to help each other out grow the game? Do you think that's it, or do you think it's more other reasons?
I think it's probably a little bit of both. I think there are some synergies, and cost cutting is probably very, very important for both of them. When you consider, so also consider this, when we have a tournament in the United States and Canada and Mexico in 2026, you've got Fox based in Los Angeles, right? You've got Telemundo based in Miami. Those are both host cities. They can actually, Telemundo can utilize Fox's infrastructure on the West Coast and maybe in Mexico, Monterrey, Guadalajara for their benefits, and similarly, same thing going the other way on the East Coast with Telemundo. Now, the irony is of this: most major broadcasters in the United States are based in New York. These are two broadcasters that do not have their setups in New York. So that's a little bit of an irony when it comes down to it. But yeah, I think there'll be some synergies. I had actually speculated about this, not publicly, but privately with people regarding Qatar. Would there be, because of the timing of the World Cup, because of the length of the World Cup, it being kind of contracted, and the circumstances, would Telemundo, which is owned by NBC Universal, of course, would there be some sort of synergy attempts to work with Fox? Those two networks have worked together before on various things. Obviously, they compete on far more than they cooperate on. But you do see these sorts of odd cooperations based on circumstances around tournaments. I mean, I guess, yeah, the most notable example is the NCAA tournament with CBS and Turner. But another example is the Masters tournament in golf, where ESPN and CBS cooperate, and so on and so forth. So that's and previously when ESPN had the early rounds of the U.S. Open in golf, although now this year I notice it's all on USA, which means NBC has monopolized the whole thing. But there are precedents for this.
Yeah, and it makes sense, though, to make the announcement in the media capital of the world, New York City. And like you said, too, with Telemundo having offices, headquarters in Miami, and Fox in Los Angeles, okay, let's do it in New York. And NBC studios have their studios there in Rockefeller Center in Manhattan. So do it there and then share best practices, kind of share work together hand in hand. Now, when it comes to the World Cup in 2022 in November, you can bet that they'll be battling side by side, actually against each other, because it's a ratings war at that point. Telemundo trying to get as many viewers as possible, Fox at the same time trying to do the same thing too. So I think once we get to the tournament, there'll be less kind of niceties, and then it's going to be more kind of full on, hey, let's do the best we can and try to beat the other one. So, Kartik, that's the World Cup for 2026. It's starting to get exciting now that we know the city's there. In regards to another big announcement this week, and this was something that we've been, gosh, almost, probably we've been talking about this topic for, I'd say, over a year. And that's the MLS TV rights deal. Actually, probably longer than a year, probably closer to a year and a half to 2 years. We knew it was coming. And originally, expectations were that it was going to be the fall of 2021 when it would be announced. But at that time, I think it was actually Fox and ESPN said, hey, and CBS at the time said, hey, we're not ready to have discussions right now. We want to wait until after the Premier League TV deal is done. That was done. And then the talks continued and they dragged on. And we had a conference call with Major League Soccer in February, I believe it was. Don Garber saying that he hoped to have everything finalized by the end of March. And here we were, middle of June, still waiting, nothing. I mean, basically a lot of reporting done by us and The Athletic and Sports Business Journal, among others, in regards to our sources and what they were telling us and kind of blow by blow. And this has been a long, drawn-out fight. And Kartik, we're finally there. MLS this week made a big announcement. Basically, they're going with the second biggest, most valuable company in the world, Apple TV, and Apple. And the way it works, just for those who are listening that may not have gotten all the details yet, so MLS will have a streaming app that will live within the Apple TV app, and that will begin in 2023. They will have global rights. Apple will have global rights to Major League Soccer, every single game, from 2023 onwards for the next 10 years. Now, the part that hasn't been determined yet is the television side, the linear side. We'll get to that in a little bit. But overall, what was your initial take, Kartik, when you heard the news and got all the details? Were you optimistic, positive? What was your initial reaction to the news?
My initial reaction was very, very positive. And since then, I've had some walkbacks based on my own introspection and also some reporting I can give. Now, first off, Chris, you may have reported this also. I'm told ESPN did not make a bid for the
streaming.
For the local game component, what Apple got, which kind of shocks me given that that has lived within MLS Live, as it used to be known, has lived within ESPN Plus for now, four or five seasons? So that surprised me. The second thing is, I think that my initial optimism, which was really about MLS linking up with a brand like Apple, with a name like Apple, and seeing Tim Cook tweet this out, and Tim Cook appear with Don Garber, and you can't buy that sort of credibility and publicity. So that's still a big win for MLS. I'm not saying it isn't, but I maybe got moved at noon Eastern time on Tuesday, when this happened. Too much by seeing that and thinking this is amazing. This is great for MLS. I had been for a long time on here, as our listeners know, advocating MLS do a deal with either Apple or Amazon. Actually, I had said Amazon for most of that time, but do this sort of deal. So that I'm very, very optimistic about. And I think there's also going to be the ability for season ticket holders of MLS clubs to have this package for free. As kind of a incentive to buy season tickets or maintain season tickets, and everything living within one app, no more blackouts, all of that is positive. I'll tell you what's negative now.
Wait. Okay. Before we go there, same as you, Kartik. When I saw the headlines and I was on the call with Don Garber, learning about the announcement, hearing from Apple, getting all the details. $2.5 billion, a 10-year deal, $250 million a year for MLS. This is a big deal. I mean, like you said too, Apple is a great brand. It's a quality brand. Not everyone's Apple fans, but they have a huge share in this world in terms of technology. They're going to be around for a long time. They're not going anywhere. This is a company that you can definitely associate with and ride that, because there's a lot of positive things to come out of that brand. But overall, though, too, once I started, it, at first it was very complicated because, okay, all right, the way that MLS explained it in terms of the way it was working, it actually took a while to deconstruct exactly what this is. And I guess let's look at it from the consumer point of view, first of all, Kartik. So if you're a cord cutter, this is fantastic news. You now have an opportunity, if you want to, beginning in 2023, for the next 10 years, to subscribe to a streaming app to watch every single game, no matter where you are in the world. You could be living in Asia, Europe, you mean North America, you name it. You now have access to every single MLS game through the MLS streaming app, which is available on Apple TV for a price. Now, we don't know what that price is. We don't know how that's going to work. So that's the first thing. The second thing of that then, too, is that Apple TV Plus, which is their streaming service, now they will show some of the games now and again. So if you're an Apple TV Plus subscriber, which is $5 a month, oftentimes you get kind of that for free if you buy an Apple device, you will have access to some of the games, a small number of the games. And also there will be a small number of games that are going to be available for free in the Apple TV app. You will be able to watch some of the games for free. Now, that's going to be a small number, too. But that's probably in 2023, when the season starts, they're going to start using that. I mean, basically kind of say, hey, watch the game for free. If you like the service, go ahead and subscribe, and then we'll find out what the price is. So from the consumer point of view, this removes blackouts. No blackouts, which is a big deal for a lot of soccer fans in the United States. You can't see your local team. For a number of different reasons, depending on where you live. Now you don't need a VPN, you don't need to figure out illegal streaming, you can watch these legally. So I think from the consumer point of view, it's positive. In terms of if you're a cord cutter or someone that's a kind of streaming proficient. However, the price, I mean, that's the thing, we don't know what the price is. You mentioned too that the season ticket holders will get this Apple TV streaming service, this MLS streaming service for free. We don't know in terms of season ticket prices. Will those prices go up? I would imagine they would. But that's a good idea. I mean, if you're a season ticket holder, you now have access to all the games. And that hopefully will help grow the audience too. You mean there's no obstacles there other than price. So on the positives, Kartik, I think from the consumer point of view, this is a good thing. The biggest thing, like you two, I did a little bit of a walk back too, because as I was deconstructing it, analyzing this, all the numbers, analyzing all the details, I started to figure out. I was like, but what about the linear side? We don't know the television side at all, and it's going to be weeks before there is a deal done on the TV side. So in many ways, Kartik, what I think has happened here is that MLS knew that they were in a corner. MLS started negotiations last summer with ESPN, Fox, and Univision. They were told to wait after the Premier League deal was done. Then they've been going back and forth. And the reality is, like you said too, ESPN said they're not interested in streaming any games. They did not bid for the streaming rights. Fox has been very lukewarm, back and forth. Yeah, we're interested. We're not really interested. We're not really focused on club soccer. We're more focused on big international soccer events. Univision is interested, for sure, because of the League's Cup. But in our interview with, or discussion with Felipe Cardenas, they wanted some big changes. They wanted to kind of shake the league up a little bit, get the league being more aggressive about calendar changes and about how they marketed the team and clubs and the league. So I think in many ways that Apple found themselves in a corner where there's very little interest on the TV side. Turner Sports and Warner Media had acquired the rights to the national team. So now there's less interest in getting the rights to Major League Soccer. And because there's not that much interest on the TV side, and because this has been dragging on for months, I think MLS rushed it and said, hey, we can't wait any longer. Let's go ahead and announce that we've got an exclusive deal with Apple on the streaming side. And initially, some of the reporting that we did about a month ago was that Apple TV was not sure about this deal because they wanted the global rights, and MLS was resistant to that. They didn't want to give the global rights because with the global rights, there's a lot there. We'll get into that in a little bit too. So I think in many ways, MLS felt themselves in a corner, very little interest on TV. Streaming was interested. And they said to Apple, okay, all right, we'll give you everything. And $250 million a year for 10 years, let's go for it. Hoping that maybe this kind of then, I mean, MLS can't wait forever for the TV side. And now they go into the difficult period of trying to shop MLS now to TV networks that won't have exclusivity to these games.
Yeah, and that's that all mirrors my concerns. And let me give you another concern that's come up in my mind the last 3 days, which is as much as we bash RSNs, I do think that there is some benefit for MLS to have their local teams on the same platform locally on linear television as NHL teams and NBA teams and Major League Baseball teams and leading college programs in those areas. There is sort of a status of being a major league by being on those channels. USL teams are not on those channels. Minor league baseball teams are not on those channels. So there's sort of a major league feel to being on RSNs. Now, maybe this is me being old-fashioned and having grown up with RSNs. A lot of younger people didn't grow up with RSNs. But I've always thought it's great that MLS gets some promotion on, you know, Comcast Bay Area and on the various Fox Sports Nets throughout the country, which are also showing Dodgers games or Boston Celtics games or whoever, right? So I think that that's something that we don't talk about enough. But there's part of this is making sure MLS and soccer in general as a sport remain registered in the major league department and in the big time department. Because, Chris, unfortunately, I found in the last couple weeks, much to my surprise, there were still a lot of soccer haters in the U.S. sports media. A lot more than you would think in 2022. So I'm a little queasy about MLS disassociating from the RSNs for that reason. But at the same time, I think on the whole, it's better to have this situation without blackouts, without RSNs also bumping MLS games for those other sports I mentioned. That's another problem historically. Then, you know, the continued association. But I do think there could be some backlash because of it.
Yeah, I think, again, for cord cutters, this is a great deal, depending on the price, right? You have access to all these games. And if the price is reasonable, this would be a slam dunk for fans of Major League Soccer or Major League Soccer clubs. However, if you're a Major League Soccer, you want to make an announcement with everything at the same time. You want to say, hey, all right, here's how it's going to work. Here's the streaming. Apple has that. Now, on the TV side, linear side, ESPN, which you know from your reporting and my reporting, that ESPN is very interested in a smaller package of TV games that they want and will likely get, hopefully, and will show on U.S. television. But it's going to be a small number, much smaller than it is now. So... And then Spanish language in terms of Univision, this is what they're going to get. This is how many games they're going to show. And maybe Fox gets some small package or something, if anything. But if you're Major League Soccer, you make that announcement all together at the same time, like you did in 2015 when you had Univision, Fox, and ESPN at the table with Don Garber for a major, and with U.S. soccer, for a major announcement, sitting everyone down together saying, okay, this is exactly how this is going to work. We're in a situation right now, Kartik, where we don't know how this is going to work. If you're Fox Sports, I mean, how interested are you in getting rights to TV rights to some of these games? If you know that, you mean, people can watch it on streaming and you can watch it on there, that's going to cannibalize your TV audience. Same with ESPN. If you're ESPN, you want to still be in the soccer business in terms of television, still show soccer on television, but are you willing to pay a lot of money for those rights if you know that those games are also available on Apple TV?
I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of speculation as to whether people are going to pay for this, pay for the add-on or not. I don't know. I mean, we'll have to see. A lot of people hesitate about adding another streaming service and then adding an add-on, and then ultimately they do it. So we'll see. We won't know for a year.
Right, exactly. Well, and that's the big thing. So again, from the consumer point of view, from streaming, I'm good with that. However, the TV is still a question mark. There's concerns about that. And I think in many ways, MLS needs TV. MLS needs ESPN more than ESPN needs MLS. And what I mean by that is ESPN has a massive reach. So if you have your games on ABC or ESPN, or it's on, you know, mentioned on SportsCenter, or you mean you have ESPNFC.com talking about it, you're very visible. I mean, your games are out there. People are talking about MLS. However, if all the games are on streaming and then ESPN gets a small number of games and there's less interest in MLS on the TV side, it's almost like MLS could get left behind here, Kartik, where you have your hardcore audience streaming. Are you going to be able to win over the fans to get them to sign up for Apple to get MLS?
So my understanding is that ESPN is still very much, and Univision, very much in the frame for linear rights, Chris. However, I'm told by a couple of good sources that ESPN, which shows about 40 matches between all their platforms on linear now, wants to drop down to 20 to 25. Which is a big cut, and obviously not having a streaming component probably is a disincentive for them. I'm not sure if Fox is even interested anymore. No one seems to want to answer my questions about that. So it's possible Fox is out, that they don't yeah. want it anymore, which is quite a blow for MLS, I would think. Univision, I assume, is still interested. I don't know that for sure. And I haven't heard about Turner in a while from talking to people. I've confirmed this week that ESPN is still interested, but not interested in as many windows as they have currently. So you're basically a streaming property then. I do think, though, with a limited linear presence, it's better than not having any linear presence, I suppose. But yeah. It wouldn't be that terribly different than what we have with USL currently, right? USL has something like 10 to 12 matches on ESPN platforms. Now, granted, none of them are on ABC, and I think MLS, if they do another deal with ESPN, will have games on ABC, and maybe several games on ABC a season still. But I think they're going all in on streaming and on counting on, and I think this is the key, Chris, counting on the fact their fans are different. Their fans are younger, and this goes back to the whole RSN thing that I laid out. I realize the argument I laid out may not appeal to most MLS fans, because they're younger, they're more tech savvy, they're a little hipper, they're more into streaming, and maybe MLS being the first league. And to MLS's credit, they got a lot of attention this week in the mainstream sports business market coverage in terms of doing this deal with Apple, being the first league to go completely in this direction. Maybe they get some bounce. Particularly with a younger audience. Look, we have to look at it both ways. I know that's against conventional wisdom, but
and that was Don Garber saying, like, hey, like, we're the first league to go all streaming. Well, what about the Bundesliga 3 years ago with ESPN Plus? I mean, people forget about the Bundesliga. They're doing okay, but so a lot of it. That's the thing that MLS is a star at, is public relations. Don Garber is a spin master. If you listen to him, definitely he ton of spin, like, just like Gianni Infantino with FIFA on the World Cup announcement on Thursday. But you said Kartik, MLS is going all in because of the audience, because of the younger demographic, more tech savvy. Social media, et cetera. I disagree there. I think they're all in because of the money, because nobody else was offering a large amount of money. They know they need the huge amount of money in terms of to grow this league in the future, and they can't rely on expansion fees forever. So at some point, those expansion fees are going to come to an end, or are basically going to get reduced, because there's only so many cities that you're going to have an MLS league of, 40 teams? So they're all in, not because of the audience. They're all in because of the money. And I think the audience, yes, younger, tech savvy, et cetera, et cetera, probably more likely to stream illegally. So I don't know. So I disagree there. The last thing here, Kartik, before we move on, is the question of production. And we haven't even talked about this. As part of this deal, MLS is going to be producing the games themselves. And it's likely that they will probably pick and choose some of the local stars from around the United States, but it'll all be centralized. Roughly about half of the games are going to be produced on site, where they'll have people on site. But the other half are going to be basically kind of off the monitor in a studio. And MLS is responsible for the production. That is that's a concern I have, Kartik. I mean, how does MLS know how to produce soccer? Because if you look at MLS's back, that was an ESPN production. ESPN went ahead, working hand in hand very closely with MLS, but that was an ESPN baby. They managed that whole thing and pulled it off, and it was just an amazing an accomplishment. However, is MLS going to cherry pick those commentators or co-commentators that are kind of blah, that don't really have any opinions, that are going to be just a name, not really any value? Or what is that production going to look like?
Yeah. That's a very, very valid concern. I think also there's a monetary concern. Maybe we'll get into that on a future episode. I have to go back and cross my T's and dot my I's before I get too deep into that issue. But I have some experience knowing about the production costs for local broadcasts like this and centralizing production. So it's not going to be cheap. So that a chunk of that $250 a year is going to come out on this. And then I think your point about commentators, very well taken. And we have seen this over and over again with leagues that centralize production, that the quality of commentator, the commentator goes from being a someone with a certain degree of critical analysis, particularly the co-commentators, to being a cheerleader or a propagandist for the product. And I include what USL has done with their centralized production in that. You can't criticize USL in any fashion. I mean, we saw it with Kate Markgraff, right? When she got taken off a broadcast, although she's now obviously working for U.S. Soccer, but criticized the turf in Louisville. So, and there have been other examples that I'm aware of. So, this is a major, major concern, particularly for a league that's so, as you mentioned with Don Garber's public relations savvy, so concerned about anything said about it. Now, this having been said, Chris, in the last few years, I've noticed MLS has allowed more critiques and criticisms to go, right? And they've allowed more kind of individualism or edginess than they previously did. They're less insecure about that than they were 7-8 years ago. So that's a positive. But I still think it's a major, major concern. You raise a huge issue that I think you and I will probably be talking about for the next few years on this show.
Yeah, production also, because it's Apple, right? There's an expected quality level from Apple users in terms of using the interface and the software and the hardware and the programs that Apple TV Plus, as one example, on the streaming side show. It's top quality. So it's really important that MLS puts a lot of energy and resources into that to actually really pull off a really good production. Having said that, though, too, that takes money away from the money they're getting from Apple, because MLS is footing the bill. So do they try to cut corners and simplify it and not bring in the top talent? We'll probably get into that a little bit in the listener mailbag. Before we move on, and actually, Kartik, you mentioned in terms of kind of analyzing this further, you can expect stories at worldsoccertalk.com as well as on the podcast, too, where we'll get deeper into this, because it is a fascinating topic and it's something that's still not done, right? With the TV side, the linear side, we still don't have the answers there. And depending on what happens on that side, that could have a big impact, too. So it's interesting timing, and I think it's great that MLS has finally got it done. However, I mean, MLS going to market and announcing this without having the whole big picture complete is a worrying sign. And again, we'll get more into this in the stories at worldsoccertalk.com. Kartik, looking at this weekend, actually, before we go to this weekend, I don't want to spend too long on this one, but we have to talk about UEFA Nations League. We've been watching it intently the last 2 weeks. I've enjoyed it. I've watched a lot of the games. But oh my words, England was absolutely pathetic.
Yeah, I've watched most of the games, and I'll admit, I mean, maybe this is where I can be accused of being a Euro snob. I know there were World Cup qualifiers that determined World Cup who was going to the World Cup on Monday and Tuesday. You were probably watching those matches, Chris. I was watching the yep. Nations League at the same time. I have to admit that. I raise my hand and plead guilty. One day was France-Croatia. I wasn't going to miss that, a rematch of the last World Cup final, and then the next day was England playing, Wales playing, Germany, Italy. So on England, real quickly, don't want to spend too much time on this, but the English media, they have a field day whenever England isn't doing well. For those who think people are critical of the U.S. national team, you haven't seen anything yet. Right now, there's a view in England that either people have entrenched behind Southgate, and I tend to be pro-Southgate. I think he's more than earned. He has credit in the bank. He's earned the right to continue in this job, and quite frankly, I like him because he's a very cosmopolitan, tolerant kind of New England. It reflects a New England as the manager. But my goodness, the British press is going on and on about his position. In the wake of England has gone, their performances have been increasingly poor. The last seven matches they've had against better opposition, they have only one win, which was in the friendly against Switzerland. The last six or seven really high-end competitive matches, last six competitive matches, they don't have against good opposition. Hungary three times, Germany once, Italy once, Poland once, they don't have a win, right? They have four draws in there, and they have the two losses to Hungary in there. So there are some warning signs. Real quickly, I think the only two things Southgate can really change, or maybe three things, are we don't know why James Maddison isn't in this team. I assume it's something personal, James Maddison of Leicester. He does give England, Chris, potentially something creatively that will be very different than what they're getting out of Mount and Foden and other guys playing in an advanced central midfield position. Grealish also among them. Grealish is a guy that we know Southgate doesn't really like. Eric Dier, who Southgate liked in 2018, seemingly has not liked since. I think he would really help. Not sure why he isn't getting called in. And then maybe if you're Southgate, in spite of their form at Man United, you have to roll the dice and take either Rashford or Sancho to the tournament, because I can see very easily, now obviously they open with Iran, that's a match they should win, but after that they play the U.S. and they play Wales. I at this point, I'm not sure I would even favor England against Wales. And maybe they're a slight favorite against the U.S., but based on recent form, I think England could lose both those matches. And certainly, I think the yep. Wales match, I would, at this point, Chris, you probably don't want to hear this because you'll think it's a jinx. I would pick Wales if I had to pick one or the other at this point. Based on the squads, the way the yeah. squads are playing, how good I think some of those Welsh players will be come November. We've talked about Brendan Johnson before. So I think in spite of backing Southgate, I would say some of the critiques are warranted, and he's going to have to make those changes. He's going to have to bring Dier back into the team. He's going to have to give Maddison a look, unless there's some disciplinary thing we don't know about. But there hasn't been any issue that we know about with Maddison at Leicester, so I don't get right. that. And then, obviously, as I mentioned, right, Rashford and Sancho.
Yeah, so Kartik, I think in many ways England needs to erase exactly what happened in the UEFA Nations League for the last month, basically. And then when they come back in September for the next run of UEFA Nations League games, I mean, Gareth Southgate has to have some introspection in terms of some of his choices. And at that point, you hope that the players, well rested after a summer break, and then just the early part of the season for the Premier League teams, will be ready to actually play much better than they did these past few weeks. What I would say, the only light of shining light that came out of these England games, anyone who watched it on Fubo TV, was the co-commentator Paul Robinson making his debut as a co-commentator, and I thought he was really, really good. I thought this was definitely a breath of fresh air, teamed with Peter Drury, but Paul Robinson had some really good insights, and it got a bit painful in that Hungary match, the second of the Hungary matches, but I thought the other games, he was fantastic.
Yeah, and this is a preview for NBC viewers here in the States. When you're paired with Peter Drury, as a co-commentator, you stand out. He sets you up well. This is why, as you keep saying, Chris, he's one of the best in the English language. One real quick point again, Chris, I don't want to belabor this, but the Southgate defenders in the British press have used the excuse that this is after a long season. Everybody in Europe is having these matches after a long season. Every Hungarian player just went through a long season, yet they beat England twice in the last 10 days. So that excuse I don't really buy. I mean, Wales, they had a long season. All those Welsh players, look at how well they played in the last 10 days.
All right, Kartik, let's look to matches to watch this weekend. What's your recommendation?
Yeah, so this match has been moved from ESPN2 to ESPN. Detroit and El Paso, USL, noon on Saturday, the 18th. Really, really great opportunity for those of you not familiar with the atmosphere at Detroit City home matches at Kenilworth Stadium to get a look at it on big ESPN, on linear television. So highly recommend that. Less for the match and more for the atmosphere.
It's funny too, Kartik, because my recommendation was a different game, but based on your recommendation, I'm changing my recommendation and going with yours, and I second it. The match atmosphere, yes, definitely from Detroit, which is always really entertaining. Definitely very different than what we're used to seeing in U.S. soccer. But also for a lot of listeners, too, I'm sure this is a great opportunity to watch USL Championship on ESPN on noon on Saturday Eastern Time. All right, just one piece of news. And this is an interesting piece of news, but it is important to definitely let listeners know. And Peacock is planning to end free Peacock Premium for Xfinity customers at some point in the future. So this was this came from a call this week in regards to looking ahead to the future and how Peacock's doing and how well it's doing, et cetera, et cetera. However, many of the people that have Peacock Premium have it for free if you get Xfinity, whether it's internet or Xfinity on cable. And NBC, Universal, and Comcast looking to the future, looking at the possibility of going ahead and actually charging customers of Xfinity to have access to Peacock Premium. What does this mean for soccer? Well, most of the listeners who are Premier League fans, you mean probably watch Peacock Premium, a lot of the Premier League games on there. And if you're a Comcast Xfinity customer, there could come a point in time in the near future where you may have to actually start paying $5 a month to have access to that, where previously it would have been available for free as part of your Xfinity subscription.
And Chris, this is a pretty big deal because I know a lot of people who have Comcast who have continued their Premier League fandom while kind of dropping off of other leagues because of the streaming situation, La Liga, Bundesliga, everything being on ESPN Plus, because they have that as part of Xfinity. And so it's a potential issue for the Premier League going forward.
All right, let's move on to listener mailbag. This week we have several new letters from brand new listeners, which is wonderful news. There's a lot to get into here. So first up is Bradley, who shares some opinions about our discussion about Ola White from last week. And he says, this week I have to take umbrage with some of the hyperbole about Ola White that both of you discussed. First, Chris, I'm not sure the timeline matches up for Ola to have stayed quiet about mentioning the Saudis during Premier League broadcasts in order for him to later get a job working for LIV Golf. Phil Mickelson was hired in October 2021, right around the time of the Newcastle takeover. I think Phil was more interested in getting players and events courses lined up before he began to discuss broadcasters. I'm sure initially LIV Golf hoped that they'd be able to work with the PGA and its broadcasters. Only later did the PGA shift entirely away, which may then have led to Ola being asked, as he is an outsider. I'm not an inside source, but unless one day Ola admits it, that's dubious speculation. Second, I don't think Ola doing the LIV Golf Tour is going to hurt his chances to get MLS and potentially World Cup broadcasts for two reasons. One, I think we're in a prisoner of the moment mode as this tour has just kicked off. In a few months, we'll be on to another news story and Ola's involvement will not be seen as an issue. And two, the World Cup broadcaster is Fox, whose 2018 World Cup broadcasts we're pretty forgiving of Putin and company, and we'll likely have the same ethos for its Qatar coverage. I'm not sure the Saudis is where Fox would draw the line. The only way Fox intentionally leaves him out is if the Saudi government's royal family pulls a specific heinous act in the next 5 months that grabs worldwide attention, similar to the murder of Khashoggi, as then any relation to a Saudi-backed entity will be deemed toxic. But if it happens, if nothing happens, we'll all forget. I doubt Arlo ever covers a golf major or PGA event, but soccer, it won't make a difference. So, Kartik, let me go to you first. What do you think? Do you think Arlo has an opportunity? Do you think a broadcaster in the United States would hire Arlo White either for MLS or World Cup games?
It is a good point, I guess, that we're a prisoner of the moment and we're saying this in the moment, Bradley. But at the same time, this LIV Golf controversy seems to keep raging, right? It wasn't a 1 or 2 day news story. And in fact, it became a mainstream news story in the United States and in the United Kingdom. I mean, I get these alerts. I'd wake up in the morning and have these alerts from The Telegraph and from The Guardian to UK publications on different sides of the political fence that would be on top, ahead of like Russia, Ukraine, and Boris Johnson, other than the no confidence vote. They're talking about this, and I'm seeing the same thing in the US. So I think it's going to be tough. Now, maybe in a year, it would be different. Maybe when this Apple package starts for MLS, but the World Cup for Fox may be too soon. I think that's a potential issue. And then I think another potential issue actually with that, I don't want to get too deep into this, is the Saudi-Qatari relationship to begin with. I mean, having Arlo White, who's working effectively for the Saudi Sovereign Wealth Fund, calling these golf tournaments, going to Qatar and calling matches. Maybe he could do it from the monitor in Los Angeles, right? Maybe he could do that, mm-hmm. or in London. But I think that might be an issue too for Qatar.
Yeah, and Bradley, definitely. I mean, things will calm down a little bit, I'm sure, in the coming months. However, I still think that fans will not forget this, and more so the broadcasters. So if you're Apple, who has good PR, has a positive kind of public relations, you mean there's not a lot of controversy with Apple. Same thing with MLS. These are two companies that have a very positive image for the most part. Not everyone loves them, but for the most part, they don't strike a lot of controversy. So I think in many ways, if you did have Arlo White go to MLS and Apple, that would be very controversial. That would make Apple look bad. That would make MLS look bad. There'd be a lot of people questioning why is he broadcasting games for MLS. And it could cause people to actually stop them from subscribing or watching that league or that service because of one person. However, on the Fox side, Fox is all about controversy. So whether it's Piers Morgan in the past, having him do games for Fox Sports, doing FA Cup finals and all sorts of things for US soccer, I think Fox is okay with controversy and politics. Your points are definitely good, Kartik, in terms of the Saudis and Qatar and those relationships too. But Fox, that's a possibility. Maybe World Cups he would do, but I think in many ways there's a lot of people, a lot of broadcasters that would not touch Arlo White right now, and probably not for the next several months. From one of my sources, he told me that in terms of the LIV Golf opportunity, LIV Golf went through a long list of people before they got to Arlo White. All the people above Arlo White that had opportunities to actually commentate LIV Golf said no. I'm not going to take it. No way. Wow. Until it came to Arlo White, and Arlo White went ahead and accepted the terms. So I think it's one of those things that as a talent, as a broadcaster, you have to be really careful about these things.
So basically, Chris, to interpret that probably means each one of those commentators felt like there might be or would be a backlash against them and career opportunities going forward that would be impacted if they took this. Okay. Yeah, that's big.
Yeah. All right, next up is Nick. Nick says, long-time listener of the podcast, but I just had to rant about Fox Sports. They are an absolute disgrace of a sports broadcaster. The amount of Nations League games that either stopped completely, Bosnia against Finland, for example, and didn't come back, or cut out during the game for several minutes is insane. I watched Nations League for the past 3 years on ESPN Plus and never had a technical issue. Also, for the big games, they sometimes skip the national anthems and lineups and jump right to kickoff. This happened with the New Zealand-Costa Rica match in the Intercontinental Playoff Final. This is a game for a place in the World Cup, and they couldn't even get the broadcast up early enough to show the lineups and national anthems. Another thing I can't stand is John Strong and Stu Holden constantly shoehorning the US men's national team into every broadcast they do. It could be a team versus Fiji, and Strong will find some ridiculous way to throw in a useless stat about the U.S. men's national team. They are clearly only interested in every narrative revolving around the U.S. men's national team, when in reality the soccer world could care less about the U.S. I don't think people tuning in to watch an UEFA Nations League game need to hear a little pointless soundbite from Stu Holden or John Strong about the USMNT. Also, a special shout out to Rob Stone, who is about as clueless as it gets. Unfortunately, everyone will have to sit through these clowns for the next couple of World Cups and European Championships, because Fox, for some reason, keeps bidding for soccer rights with absolutely no intention of making good use of them. Looks like I will be watching in Spanish from here on out. Let's move on, Kartik. We got a lot to get to. Next up is Greg. Greg says, thanks always for taking the listeners' questions. I have to say that it annoys me when I hear commentators and soccer analysts mock the CONCACAF Nations League and Gold Cup, and then in the next breath talk up UEFA and all the competitions that they have. At this point, UEFA already has the Euros, the UEFA Nations League, and also took part in the Finalissima with CONMEBOL. There have been reports that CONMEBOL could enter the UEFA Nations League eventually as well, and it's clear they are looking to partner further since they are setting up a joint office in London. So my question is, what other confederations, aside from UEFA and CONMEBOL, what are they supposed to do? Not play games? Give up soccer? Just watch European and South American teams play? In my opinion, the rest of the confederations should continue to develop their own tournaments, and they should also start working together to create some interesting competitions that occur between World Cups. There is no reason to not reach out and to work together to perhaps create something new and interesting. Just because you are not invited to the party with the popular kids doesn't mean you need to stay home all night. Find some friends, get some food, drink some music, and create your own party. Soon enough, the party you're throwing might turn into the better one anyway. You never know. Good points there by Greg Kartik. I think part of the issue, though, to me, though, is that CONCACAF copies UEFA. I mean, down to the names. I mean, USL does this too, right? So, you mean, UEFA creates the Nations League, so CONCACAF creates the CONCACAF Nations League. UEFA comes up with the idea of doing the UEFA Nations League, so CONCACAF creates the CONCACAF Nations League, so on and so forth. I think in some ways, I mean, CONCACAF is what it is, and it's very different than UEFA or CONMEBOL in terms of the level of teams that they have and the number of teams that they have.
Yeah, but the Nations League, I think, is a good thing for CONCACAF. It's given a lot of island nations an opportunity to play matches that are meaningful against and home and away and against nations their same level. And it also really helped grow Canada to where they became this juggernaut in World Cup qualifying and won the octagonal, right? Now, my problem is with the Gold Cup. The Gold Cup continues to be a competition held in the United States. It continues to be a competition which effectively, I think, is a cash grab. And that's why it's held every 2 years and why it's always held in the United States. So I agree and I disagree. I completely agree on Nations League. We should not be condescending towards CONCACAF Nations League. I give CONCACAF full credit for the initiative with that, even though, as you said, Chris, you're copying UEFA. But Gold Cup, I think, has to be totally changed. To me, it's becoming an increasingly useless tournament, particularly in the years during World Cup qualifying when everyone's fielding B teams and it's being still held because it's, quite frankly, a cash grab.
All right, so we have a ton more letters. So what I'm going to do is just read two more, and then I'll save the next round for next week, And then, of course, listeners, you can always share your comments and questions and feedback too, and we'll read those out next week. So next up is Randy, a new listener, and he says, I just found you guys after desperately trying, then dumping, several US-based soccer podcasts. Most are yell fests, TV shows just dumped into a podcast, or basically gambling podcasts disguised as soccer podcasts. So thank you for doing what you do. I'm a former USAN, now living in Mexico, and my question pertains to broadcast rights for the UEFA Champions League here in Mexico. Warner Brothers Discovery won the rights through 2024 here, and they broadcast across TNT Sports Mexico and HBO Max. TNT is available on basic cable and I believe on all of the basic satellite subscription providers. HBO Max is a streaming service and, of course, costs an extra subscription fee. What Turner did and will continue to do, I suppose, is split the Champions League matches across both platforms, thus basically reducing the number of games available by half if one cannot or will not pay the additional fee. While I luckily can afford it, I refuse to subscribe on principle and know the only bar in my area that shows games also opted out. My question is, especially in economically depressed areas such as Mexico, where every peso matters, but that has a football-mad population, wouldn't the Champions League and game sponsors take issue with this? At least anecdotally, these global brands lost a non-zero number of eyeballs for half of the games and will maybe not have them over the next couple of years. It seems as if UEFA, who sell sponsorships, are not the same people who sell broadcast rights, but that would be a totally dumb way to do things from a sponsor's perspective. So good feedback there from Randy about HBO Max. We're running out of time, so I will go ahead and answer this one, Randy. And that is, I think, at the end of the day, UEFA, you would hope, cares about the number of eyeballs, number of people watching these broadcasts. But ultimately, they care more about how much money the actual media giants are bidding on the rights. And then ultimately, the media giants have to then decide, okay, how do we go ahead and monetize this? So we do half the games on TV and we get advertising revenue and then the other half on streaming. And I think in many ways, UEFA would know those plans, but wouldn't be as concerned about that. I mean, basically, at the end of the day, unfortunately, a lot of these businesses are in there to make money. And I think that's what drives things rather than driving the audience in many ways. And last but not least, MLS, there's a question here. This is probably, Kartik, a good one for you, too, before we sign off. This is from Kyle. He says, with the recent announcements of MLS going to Apple TV and U.S. soccer games going to Turner, what would be the best fit for Taylor Twellman? To go to Turner and be the voice of U.S. soccer, to go to Fox, starting with the World Cup and be an analyst, stick with ESPN and do random FA Cup and League Cup matches, or work with Apple TV and work on MLS marquee games?
So the big problem, I think, and this is a larger conversation, maybe we do a whole podcast on this, Chris, is the dispersion of soccer media rights in this country to all these various entities is also going to affect the talent maybe that calls some of these matches and is in the studio for this, and also the promotion of the sport. Truthfully, I mean, I like the options and choices, but I think it also complicates things in if you had everything consolidated on, let's say, ESPN and CBS, since they're the two that have the most rights, at least in the club game, then I think you have a real commitment to promotion of the sport and hiring the top talent by those networks and by those media companies. Now, the rights are dispersed all over the place. Fox is becoming more and more just the place to watch international matches. Turner has carved its own niche with the U.S., and that's just international also, right? And then NBC has isolated itself by just doing the Premier League, but then they require a certain level of talent and type of talent for that. So I think I can't answer the question as to what would be best for Twellman, but I hope he gets the opportunity to do more than just what he's limited to at ESPN currently. And this, I think, is a larger question, Chris, something we probably need to spend a whole nother show on, about the rights being dispersed all over the place, which wasn't the case that long ago. And not that long ago, ESPN and Fox were it for soccer. Then NBC got involved, then Turner got involved, then CBS got involved, now Apple's involved. And so this complicates things from that perspective.
Yeah, no, yeah, good points too, and also too, also John Champion at ESPN. You mean he's not going to have Euros to call anymore? You mean there's a lot of question marks there too? But yeah, no, good points about maybe a future podcast topic there.
And I believe after this women's Euros, they're done with that too, right? Because that's technically part of the previous rights package because it was delayed by a year. So that goes to Fox also after this summer's tournament.
Yep, exactly. So, yeah, interesting times ahead. All right, listeners, if you want to share any feedback you have, any questions, any opinions in regards to, especially, you mean, everything we talked about today, but especially in regards to TV or streaming or production or just watching the beautiful game, there's a lot to get to. This is a long episode. I appreciate you sticking with us. You can reach out to us via email, which is web@worldsoccertalk.com. And then we have facebook.com/worldsoccertalk. You can message us there. You can also message us on Twitter @worldsoccertalk. And, of course, you can also post comments on the worldsoccertalk.com website under podcasts. And then just click the latest episode and then post away in the comments section there. Listeners, we really appreciate your time listening to this episode. And Kartik, heading into another weekend of soccer. Not as many games, but there are plenty of games from Argentina, Brazil, the United States, and many other countries available. What are you going to do, and what should the listeners do?
Enjoy your football.